This is
For a Better Life.
For a Better Life.
فرمود باعث و لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Well, in the previous episode, we talked about a better life. We talked about how a better life can be achieved. And we said that a better life is not about money, it's not about social status, it's not about material gains. A better life is not about material comfort, but about a life filled with dedication, with tolerance, and with kindness and compassion. And it is a life filled with hope, possibility, and a sense of realness. And of course, we did say that unless you change your attitude, mentality, and your mindset, you will never achieve a better life. And a better life is not possible unless you, of course, change your mindset and your attitude and your worldview. Now, I did also mention that, of course, it is important to know that we as human beings have this life and this one chance to make the best out of life, because this world is transient, this world is not eternal, and we will live only for, let's say, 50 or 60 or 70 years, and we have to make the best out of this life. We have to ensure that we live a better life. If you want to live a better life, of course, as I said in the previous episode, you have to stop making excuses. You should stop telling yourself that you cannot do. You deserve to do it, but you need to have the guts to do it. And of course, as I said, time flies. Al-fursatu tamurru kamarr sahab. Of course, the opportunity passes away and it gets lost just as the cloud in the sky passes away and moves out of the horizon. So time also flies, and of course, 1 year can be gone faster than we can imagine. So if we have actually the intention to improve, if we have the intention to achieve a better life, of course, we need to commit ourselves to living a better life, and we need to make up our minds and take action. Because without taking action, because without a firm decision, we will not achieve our goals in this life.
At this time, we have a short break, and then we'll listen to the continuation of the speech of Sheikh Javed Akbari. You're listening to For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio.
There is a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam who says, "Man sawa yawmahu fahuwa maghbun." This hadith has been transmitted and has been related from Commander of Faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. And also the same hadith has been reported from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, of course, by different narrators and on the authority of both Shia and Sunni narrators. The question is, what does it mean? Man sawa yawmahu fahuwa maghbun. Of course, literally it means he whose 2 days are equal is a loser. It's a very important hadith because it says that you need to work hard, you need to struggle, and you need to toil, you need to strive in order to thrive. If your yesterday is equal with your today, And if your last year is equal with this year, then of course you are a loser. You are at loss. You have gained nothing. Every day we need to have something. We need to achieve something. We need to perfect ourselves. We need to make gains, of course. I have got a few amazing tips which I need to share with you, of course. In order for us, obviously, to live a better life and to achieve our goals, we need to stop procrastinating. This is the first point, okay? And there is a famous proverb in English which says, do not put off till tomorrow what you can do today. And of course, procrastination is highly discouraged in Islam. Why should we push till tomorrow what we can do today? This is the question. If you do something today, you should do it. And if you can do it today, you must do it. Don't procrastinate. Do it now when you are able to do it, unless and until you value yourself, you will not value your time. And of course, unless and until you value your time, you will not do anything with it. So life is important, time is important, and we have to make use of this opportunity to do what we can do today. Do not put off till tomorrow what you can do today. So the first thing is that we should stop procrastinating. And then as we go on, there is another thing, that another point or another tip that I want to make. Never doubt yourself. I just don't get why you should doubt yourself. That's something you should never do, okay? The worst enemy to creativity is self-doubt. You should believe you can do something. Self-confidence is a great asset that you need to develop in yourself. If you start doubting that you won't be able to do something, you will never take action because you do not trust yourself and you do not have confidence. A lack of confidence will stop you from making headway, from making any progress. So stop doubting yourself. And then people pleasing. This is the third point I want to make, okay? You need to stop trying to live your life pleasing others, living for others and not for yourself. If you're busy pleasing everyone, you are not being true to yourself. You have to realize in trying to please all, you would end up pleasing no one.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Obviously, trying to please others will give you a feeling that it is your duty to please others. At the end of the day, others will also keep expecting you to do for them what they themselves can do for themselves. And you yourself will also start feeling that you can also do something, that it's your duty to do something for others in order to please them, in order to constantly get their satisfaction. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, you need to be moderate in your conduct and in your behavior, in your interaction with other people. While trying to keep others happy, of course, you need to be moderate. You need to follow the middle approach. Now, negative thoughts would not help you achieve big things. This is the fourth point. Negative thoughts will not help you achieve big things, of course. Believing in negative thoughts is the single greatest obstruction to success. So if you want to be successful, you should think positive, maintain positive thoughts. Do not be pessimistic. Do not keep negative thoughts with you. And fear of success, this is the fifth point. Ironically, for many people, the fear of success is bigger than the fear of failure. Even though success could be more frightening than failure sometimes, but of course, you have to overcome that fear. Sometimes these fears come up due to living up to parental expectations. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of failure. And achieving success should not engage your mind and your thought. And don't care about parental expectations. You need to work for yourself. You need to be honest with yourself.
That was all for this program. Inshallah, we listen to other episode of this program, For a Better Life, same time, same channel. Fi amanillah.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. Your love is all I need. So all I need. Your love is all I need. All I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, oh, oh.
Your love is all I need.
Love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms. You're listening to Youth Station.
Choo choo kajoo, it's the Youth Station for you.
Hop on board.
There you go. That's the train spirit.
Thank you so very much for joining us, you guys. I'm Zainab, and I'm joined by.
Mudan Farhaider.
Yes. Yeah. Bro.
Yo.
Do you consider yourself a happy person?
No. Do you?
No. I don't think happy applies to our generation.
That is really bleak, and it's true.
It's so true.
It is so true.
Show me a single happy millennial, like genuinely happy.
But generally speaking, I'd say, yeah, we do have a bit of a... This generation is a little bit...
Miserable. Just
yeah,
say
miserable,
it.
Miserable, yeah.
We're miserable.
Yeah. But you're happy in front of people, which is great, because we can fool people.
Yes,
like,
we're so good at pretending. Yeah. We're so good at putting up that persona.
That's one thing I think that our generation mastered, pretending. And that's really scary. We're very good at wearing masks.
Mm.
So we can convince the whole world through social media, for example, that we're the happiest people in the world when we're not.
Hashtag living our best lives.
Yeah, we're just the best.
Yeah, speaking of Instagram, there was a quote that said we're just... sad generation with happy pictures. It hit home. And it's so accurate.
Do you make yourself happy?
Yes.
Okay, you make yourself happy.
I actively try to make myself happy, especially during times that... Okay, see, as a woman, I feel that this must be talked about. Awareness should be brought to it in an atmosphere of diversity. Because I feel like, okay, as a woman, there are... certain times in the month or year that there's nothing I can do with my level of happiness, right? It is what it is. The best I can do is just be kind with myself and let this phase pass because it's the natural cycle of things. But other than that, I feel like I actively have to take extra steps to maintain a certain degree of happiness. I don't consider myself as a happy person in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with our generation and it has to do with like, I don't know, personal things. And the fact that you said our generation is really good at pretending is because I feel that the 90s were a very judgmental sort of era.
Yeah, we were kind of transitioning into this new world.
Modernism,
brave new world, right?
Yeah. Actual 2000s. And we're like that gap, that bridging generation between them and the others.
Yeah, we...
Boomers and Gen Z.
Yeah, and the boomers were completely different.
They were.
They have a different sense of humor.
Exactly.
They were much more hardworking, I'd say. They were willing to apply themselves and work hard and accomplish something, whereas
But then again, they were really stringent as well. They're not as flexible as we are.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's right. They were much more rigid.
Yeah.
That's what allowed them to be stubborn and apply themselves to certain things.
But then they ruined certain other things altogether.
They ruined our lives.
Exactly. And they're not as open-minded as we are as well, you know? But they for sure ruined our lives.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I love them. We have to respect them. But they really ruined our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it was because of their negligence, and they just didn't... I don't know, like, world politics and stuff just wasn't important for them, I feel, although they all talked about it. And they were in some way involved.
But do you think they were a happier generation?
Oh, no.
I think he was...
They were.
You mentioned negligent, and I think that it was like ignorance is bliss sort of thing.
Yeah, and in the same way we're being negligent, too.
There wasn't the level of awareness that is today back then. Like, I think about global warming, and automatically my mood just comes down a few notches. You know, I think about the polar bears, the penguins. I think about the ice caps. I think about the ozone layer. I think about the oceans. I think about the dolphins and the endangered species of animals and how the world is just...
Forget them, sister.
And every year...
We are endangered. We are an endangered...
As a species?
You might, yeah.
As a species or as a generation?
We're destroying ourselves as a species.
Then we probably just deserve it.
I was looking at a really creepy video about...
I'm craving kebab. Okay, please, sorry.
You're craving kebab?
Yeah.
What kind of kebab?
I'm thinking chicken kebab.
See,
with
this is precisely
tomato.
The problem with the millennial generation.
Brothers and sisters, we're going to go on a short break, so please stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, talking about things that we actively do to make ourselves happy, what do you do?
Islam teaches us to look at things intellectually, right? Your intellect is your hujjah, your inner hujjah. Your outer hujjah is, you know, you're the prophets and imams and Ahlul Bayt, right? Intellect, society, the modern society, do you know what it's done? Through sci-fi movies, incidentally a lot, which they had a big role to play throughout the 90s and even the 80s.
Huge role!
They've actually defined intellect as something cold and robotic and artificial and terrifying even, right? But that's not what Islam is teaching us. It's actually teaching us that intellect is one of the most important faculties within us, and... happiness actually lies in the intellect. I mean, I'm going to have to discuss this with you later because it's a long discussion and it's just like, what is he talking about when I say it like that? But no, really.
How did we manage? See, this is just...
My point is, so much of what makes us unhappy is actually just our imagination. There's no certainty in it. Like, there's loads of thoughts that the shaitan is putting into our minds, right? He's telling us, like, for example, you're not going to succeed, or you're not good enough, or you're not good looking enough, or
you're not going to find rent next month.
You're not going to be able to get... Like, what does the intellect actually tell you? It tells you...
You found it all the other months.
Yeah.
You got it.
You go.
Allah's
going to
provide for you.
Allah is the provider. You know, the intellect actually... And what I've discovered through this is happiness... is actually the default state of humanity.
Really?
It is actually the way that we were created. We're actually, by default, happy creatures.
When?
I know, it sounds so strange. That's why when I... Because I contemplated over this for, like, months, and I finally came to this conclusion, and it was such a groundbreaking discovery, you have no idea. If I have time, I'll discuss it with you, but really, it's amazing, because...
But I'm looking at us as humans in different age periods, in different ages. We were never happy. As toddlers, we were constantly going through some sort of fit. Either we were teething, either they were weaning us, either they were potty training us. We were either going through the nasty twos or the irritable threes or the fussy fours.
Yeah,
or the.
Let me just clarify. When I say it's the default state of humanity, we often think about when we were children, and now childhoods were often miserable. But children have no intellect, right? They actually, especially when they're newborns, they have zero intellect. And we actually have to train ourselves to become more and more intellectual as we grow up.
Now it makes sense. But then, come on, look at
a child, like literally, I remember just sleeping in bed. It's nighttime.
You remember doing that? Or you remember your child doing that?
No, I remember doing that. Trying to sleep in bed, like when I'm like a 5-year-old.
I remember that too.
And it's terrifying.
It was terrifying.
There's nothing scary about it. Why is a child getting scared? He has no intellect.
Wahime. Right? Our imagination was too wild.
It was really wild. And so we have to grow to allow the intellect to take control of the wahan. Because it's a beautiful faculty.
But I feel that it probably should be refined intellect that brings about happiness.
Yes.
Now, when you look at yourself, most secular scholars and, you know, academics and whatnot, they're miserable people. Hemingway says that the rarest thing in the world, I'm paraphrasing, of course, the man was like, you know, he actually knew literature. The rarest thing in the world is to see a happy, intelligent individual.
Yeah, and I think the Western world has actually done that to us. It's defined intellect as something. I remember a Simpsons episode where Homer Simpson, he has a crayon stuck up his nose from a childhood. That's why he's so dumb. Homer Simpson is this bumbling American idiot,
yeah,
right? That kind of character. In one of the episodes, he has that crayon removed, and so he becomes a genius, and he can identify with his daughter, who's really clever as well. And the conclusion of the episode is that he becomes so miserable and sad. Nothing makes him laugh anymore because they're all stupid.
Puts the crayon back as his nose.
He puts it back up his
nose. Okay,
right?
That makes sense. That sounds exactly what Homer would do.
This is what the Western world has taught
us. Yeah. All right, bro, I'm going to cut you off right there for a sec. We're going to go for a short break and be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us again on today's episode of Youth Station. One of the people that comes to my mind very often is Allama Hasanzadeh Amuli. May Allah bless his soul. The man was a philosopher, a mystic, a mathematician, a poet, you know. He was a writer, he was a thinker, he was a teacher. He was like a plethora of things. He was genuinely happy.
Right.
Most of the pictures you see of him, he's having this slight smile on his face. And you can see it in his poetry. You can see it in his interaction with other people.
I've got it.
But.
Okay, so you're going to have to visualize this, okay?
I will do my best.
There is a guy. There's a fence. There's a fence and a guy.
Uh-huh.
All right, he's trying to get and look over the fence.
Yeah.
The only thing that he has to build a ladder is books.
Yes. Okay,
so he makes a pile of these books, and finally he can look over the fence. And what he sees is disgusting. He sees a dystopian society. Everything's burning. There's like drugs and alcohol and crime everywhere. And he becomes very, very sad, right? But then he gets more books and he keeps on building. He goes higher and higher and higher until he gets above the clouds. And now he sees this beautiful sunset. Right, and birds flying and blue skies and all these colors. So there's a level of intellect, if you get to that level, then you're just going to be miserable. You have to transcend and look at the bigger picture. You have to gain more intellect than that.
Spiritual intellect.
Okay, there you go. Right, it's spiritual intellect, and that does
all right. So from now, from here where I am right now to that, it's a long, long, long journey.
No, it's not. See, Allah's already given you all the tools that you need, especially somebody like you. You really, really do have all the tools that you need. The only one who's making you unhappy is Shaitan. Otherwise...
And myself, I feel, you know, with my desires.
Ah, yeah. It should
wanting that, things that in reality aren't good for me or aren't meant for me.
Yeah, that's
makes
true.
Me pretty miserable most of the times.
But that's why we have to go back to the intellect. You know the whole idea of the four faculties in Islamic thought, right? There's the intellect, the aql, then there's the waham, the imagination, then there's the shahwa, the desire, or passion, and then there's anger. Ghadab. You've heard of these four faculties, right? These are innately what is within every human being. And the idea is that the other three faculties have to be under the control of the intellect. As long as they're under the control of the intellect, you will find happiness in a very strange way. And a sadness, too, which is also a happiness.
Balance.
It's kind of
very important. But if we were to talk about littler things, okay, we're almost out of time, and I feel like we need to talk about that too. Some sort of immediate happiness. You know, if you can find it in anything that's within the bounds of Allah's religion, just go do it. I really feel that. Just go do it. It's
like,
fine.
Can you give me an example?
If it makes you happy to go on that trip, you know. If it makes you happy, if you're like me, I have to have my quiet alone time every day with a good cup of chai, a piece of chocolate, and I don't know, my phone or a book or a piece of music. I have to do that every day for my own sanity. Otherwise, I will turn into a psychopath and go on a killing spree. That rhymed. But that's not the point, you know? Do the little things that will make you, that will help you maintain your happiness. If you're a woman, try to take care of those levels in your blood. Take that iron supplement. Take that vitamin B.
Yeah,
take that calcium.
Yeah.
Take that vitamin D. Keep your steady level of happiness on the material, physical level.
Level, yeah.
And then work, build up on that. With the whole spirituality thing. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Imam Sadev's blessed birthday. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Heartiest congratulations to you on a day of double joy. It is obvious the 17th of Rabiul Awwal is the auspicious birth anniversary of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger to mankind, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. For your information, this blessed day also happens to be the birth anniversary of the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, in 83 AH, exactly on the 136th birthday of his illustrious ancestor, the Prophet of Islam. What a blessed coincidence. So let us listen to a special feature that we have prepared in this regard. First, let us first contemplate on a gem of an advice given by the sixth Imam to one of his followers. O son of Jundab, regard him who ruptured relations with you. Give him who deprived you of his bestowals. Treat kindly he who mistreated you. Greet him who reviled you. Be just to him who disputed with you, and pardon him who wronged you in the same way you like others to pardon you. Learn lessons from God's pardoning of you. Do you not see that his son is covering the pious and licentious, and his rain is falling on the virtuous and the wrongdoers? This gem of an advice was given to a person named Abdullah ibn Jundab, and it speaks volumes of the dynamic spirit of Islam. It is the formula for building bridges in society so as to ensure a peaceful and harmonious atmosphere for attracting others to the universal message of Islam. The person who bequeathed these bezels of wisdom to posterity was none other than the reviver of the Prophet's Sunan Sira, that is the behavior and practice, who was born in Medina in the year 83 of the Hijra. It was indeed divine providence that the birthday of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger should also be the birthday. 136 years later, of his 16th infallible heir, who, like the Prophet, has also earned lasting fame as Sadiq, or the most truthful. Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, needs no introduction. Born in 83 AH, 22 years after the heartrending tragedy of Karbala, where his great-grandfather, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the grandson of the Prophet, was martyred, he spent the first dozen years of his life with his grandfather, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, and another 19 years with his own father, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, whom he succeeded to the imamat at the age of 31 in 114 AH. He lived in a crucial period of history when the godless Umayyad tyrants were on their way towards the dustbin of history, while the equally ungodly Abbasids were emerging as the new breed of usurpers of the right of political leadership of the Prophet's Ahlul Bayt. The first 18 years of his imamat saw the tyrannical rule of the Umayyads, Hisham ibn Abdul Malik, Walid II ibn Yazid II, Yazid III ibn al-Walid II, Ibrahim ibn Walid II, and Marwan II al-Himar, all of whom had no pretension to religiosity and were notorious for their open violation of the laws of God and teaching of the Prophet. In the next 16 years of his imamat, the Prophet's successor shouldered a graver responsibility. First, after the overthrow of the Umayyads, there was the offer of caliphate by one of the victorious generals of the uprising, and the imam, whose authority was God-given, burned the sealed envelope of the offer in the flame of a lamp. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, whose God-given authority as heir of the Prophet's historical proclamation of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, as the divinely designated vicegerent at Qadir in 11 AH, was beyond the grasp of any usurper, desisted from any rash decision when Abu Salama al-Khalal, one of the victorious commanders of the anti-Umayyad uprising, sent him a letter offering the caliphate. The imam coolly burned the sealed letter in the flame of a lamp because he knew that a caliphate which is offered by someone else than God is not the legitimate authority, as was the case with the scandalous gathering of Saqif ibn Sa'idah in Medina, when the deviant group selected a caliph from among themselves after a fist fight amongst themselves, while the Prophet's rightful heir, Imam Ali, was busy in funerary seminary of the Seal of Messengers. Thank you. One sunny Iranian chieftain from Khorasan named Sahl ibn Hassan came to Medina and asked Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, as to why he wasn't actively fighting for his denied political rights, in spite of the truth being on his side, when there were thousands of supporters ready to fight with him. The Imam asked him to sit down and wait. In the meantime, a servant came and was asked by the Imam whether the fire had been kindled. On receiving the reply in the affirmative, the Imam took Sahl ibn Hassan with him and went to the oven. The fire was blazing red. The Imam turned to Sahl and told him to jump into it. Sahl trembled and begged forgiveness. At this moment, Harun al-Makki, a devoted follower of the Ahlul Bayt, came and was told by the Imam to jump into the oven. Harun leapt into blaze without a second thought. The Imam then turned to Sahl ibn Hassan and, as if nothing unusual had happened, started to brief him about the circumstances prevailing in Khorasan, while the eyes and the mind of the Iranian chieftain were occupied with the fate of the person who had jumped into the oven. After a while, the Imam took Sahl toward the oven to show him what had transpired for Harun al-Makki. To his surprise, Sahl saw Harun al-Makki sitting cross-legged, safe and sound, in the blazing, all without being scorched or scalded by the fire. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, then asked the Iranian chieftain as to how many of his followers in Khorasan were like Harun al-Makki. Sahl replied, "No one, O master." In the social and jurisprudential fields, it was thus prudence on the part of Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, that saved Islam and the Sharia of the Prophet of Islam from suffering the fate of Prophet Jesus' mission that was completely distorted by Paul the Jew to become Christianity as it is known today. In the intellectual fields, so thoroughly did the Imam revolutionize sciences and academic learning that, at one time, 4,000 scholars from various parts of the Islamic world, including Asia, Africa, and Europe, sat at the feet of the heir of the Prophet to learn various disciplines, including jurisprudence, theology, rhetoric, ethics, hadith, exegesis of the Noble Quran, accounts of the past prophets, and natural sciences such as physics, chemistry, medicine, astronomy, math, botany, etc. Among its proud products was the father of chemistry, Jaber ibn Hayyan, known as Jaber to medieval Europe. Next was the devilish plot of Mansur Davanighi, the second self-styled caliph of the usurper Abbasid regime. Originally a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, he had memorized thousands of hadith on the merits of Imam Ali, peace upon him, but became a turncoat on assuming rule of the Islamic realm. He not only tormented Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, whose God-given authority he had acknowledged in his days as a persecuted fugitive during Umayyad rule, but labeled the Shia, or devoted followers of the Ahlul Bayt, as Rafizun, or rejecters of the Caliphate. It was a seditious act, since no such sect had ever existed before in Islamic history. In the face of such intricate plots, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, during his 34-year mission as the righteous heir of the Prophet of Islam, bequeathed the seekers of truth the jurisprudence known as Fiqhul Ja'fari. Imam Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, possessed the keys of divine knowledge that was beyond the imagination of the pseudo-scholars of his time, including certain self-styled jurisprudents who resorted to qiyas or analogy in religious matters, despite the warnings of the sixth imam of the Prophet's household that Iblis, the outcast, was the first one to disobey God and indulge in this self-destructive habit. Here, us, one such example of the Imam's knowledge as the heir of the Noble Quran. It is related that once, when he was only 11 years old, he entered a class scholars were discussing the subject of astronomy. The Imam, to the surprise of everyone, said, "The earth cannot be flat because of the way the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and day and night change in 24 hours. It cannot be possible." The Imam's own uncle, Zayd ibn Ali, has said, "In every age there is someone from us, the Ahlul Bayt, who is the hujjat or argument of the Almighty Allah for the people. The hujjat of this age is Ja'far ibn Muhammad, my brother's son. Everyone who follows him will not go astray, and everyone who disobeys him will not be guided."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. The Zionist regime was planted in the region to create discord. July 18th, 2015. They inject this discord into the world of Islam. Why do they do so? It is because the interests of superpowers lie in it. They do not want the Islamic Ummah to be united. They do not want this great power to arise in the horizons of global powers. They do not want this. If the Islamic Ummah were united, and if it relied on its common points, it would undoubtedly become a unique power in the firmament of global politics, considering its large population, underground resources, and provisions, and natural and human sources of wealth, and considering the countries that are located in this sensitive area of the world.
If we became united, such a phenomenon would dominate the world. They do not want this to happen. They have planted the Zionist regime in the region so that they can create discord and busy regional countries with themselves. Nations resisted the Zionist regime, and they did not surrender to them. You should pay attention to this point. During the 10 years when the Zionist regime increased its materialistic power on a daily basis with the assistance and support of England and later on America, some weak governments and vicious individuals in Muslim governments were drawn to the Zionists. Many Muslim governments and some politicians in the world of Islam, including the former Sistine regime in our country and some others, established close relations with the Zionists. This was while the Zionists were usurpers, transgressors, and murderers.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
This discord is an imposed one. July 18th, 2015. Today, the world of Islam is facing many problems. Islam has placed great emphasis on the unity, unanimity, and brotherhood of Muslims. We can hold fast by the rope that Allah stretches out individually, but Islam does not advise this. And hold fast altogether by the rope which Allah stretches out for you. Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 103.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A new poll shows that 3 out of every 4 French people believes that their purchasing power has diminished due to rising inflation, and 90% of the nation is worried about it. The nation's economy minister departed from his Western peers by admitting that inflation will continue to rise until 2023 at the earliest. Combined with unemployment, which was entrenched even before the coronavirus recession, the admission seems to announce the beginning of dreaded stagflation.
La vie est chère et encore plus à Paris.
Life is expensive, especially in Paris, from real estate to basic shopping needs to even the price of a simple lunch. Our purchasing power keeps going down.
The government has just announced a cap on household gas prices until the end of 2022. Natural gas has soared to record highs across Europe. They also announced a one-time payment of 100 euros to those who earn less than 2,000 euros per month, which amounts to 60% of the population. However, many say the one-off payment is not nearly enough.
Ça devient compliqué, ça diminue fortement.
No, it's not enough at all. When somebody is only taking home 2,000 euros a month, 100 euros isn't nearly enough to make difference when it comes to the energy costs. The government is not helping the middle class much at all.
The Yellow Vest protests, which initially kicked off 3 years ago due to rising fuel prices, just began what they called Season 2 last weekend. They are promising to continue marching. By a huge margin, purchasing power is the number one issue ahead of France's presidential election next year, just as it has been in all the elections since the great financial crisis began.
It's really fragile right now. The middle class just isn't seeing a fair relationship between their work and the amount they are paid.
Inflation is being reported seemingly worldwide, as the coronavirus lockdowns may have created a monetary monster. Many economists say the only solutions are controls on prices, as well as corporate profits, and higher wages, which have remained stagnant across the West for decades. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
This was the first face-to-face meeting of EU leaders since the bloc's energy crisis really came to the fore. Millions of citizens simply don't have the money to pay for electricity and gas bills, which have skyrocketed since the start of the year.
We will intensify our outreach to the different suppliers, also to diversify the supply we do have, and we have to speed up the work on interconnections.
Experts say Iran, with its enormous oil and gas reserves, is an obvious option for the EU. Illegal US sanctions are hampering exports, but that will change if the Iran nuclear deal is revived.
The real game changers will be if Iran comes into international market with full force, increasing its oil exports, increasing its gas production.
It has been confirmed that during their summit on Thursday and Friday, EU leaders debated erecting barbed wire along the bloc's external border to manage the refugee crisis, made worse by the situation in Afghanistan. Ursula von der Leyen says the idea is out of the question. On the subject of COVID-19, the EU has failed to convince citizens in some countries to take the vaccine. For example, the virus is now out of control in Romania and Bulgaria.
Some difficulties that are related to the vaccination hesitancy, and it's why it's also important to cooperate, to coordinate, in order to make also progress on this challenge.
Some EU nations want funding cut to Poland over alleged rule of law breaches. Right-wing leaders, such as Hungary's Viktor Orban, are dead against the move, though.
There is no need to have any sanction. It's ridiculous.
Germany's Angela Merkel, who gave her last press conference at an EU leaders summit before leaving office, says she's also opposed to legal action against Warsaw. Apart from not meeting the needs of citizens and in turn allowing populism to take hold, critics say another key reason the EU is facing rule of law issues is because those running the project have been too eager to expand at all costs to create a superstate, and in the process have allowed countries to join that do not share EU values. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A spectre is haunting America. The specter of Striketober. Upwards of 100,000 workers across the U.S. are either currently on strike or potentially just weeks away from it, amid a historic wave of labor actions that's taken the country by storm. 35,000 nurses and healthcare workers have voted to authorize a strike against healthcare giant Kaiser Permanente. 60,000 Hollywood crew members seem headed for a strike amid widespread rank-and-file disapproval of a deal negotiated by union management. And thousands of workers elsewhere have already walked off.
Last week, 10,000 UAW members in warehouse and production jobs at John Deere started currently what is the biggest strike happening in the country. We have 2,000 CWA nurses in Buffalo and 1,400 Kellogg workers. They're also out on strike. about 1,000 mine workers in Alabama have been on strike at Warrior Met Coal since this past April.
These are just some of over a dozen labor actions brewing across the country. As executives have seen profits soar amid the COVID-19 pandemic, workers are insisting on their own piece of the pie. And with supply chain issues plaguing distribution and now hiring signs popping up left and right, they're wielding historic leverage to secure the raises and benefits they say management has been withholding for too long.
There is a tight labor market. Workers are fed up with being mistreated. We have, you know, the most pro-union president ever, potentially even more than FDR. We have a union leader at the Department of Labor who is heading the Department of Labor. Positive union sentiment in polls are the highest it's been in a very long time. Labor has a lot of leverage, and this critical moment is not going to last forever.
With the wind at their backs, many workers say it's time to press their advantage and lock in the wage increases and workplace improvements that have been steadily eroded by decades of neoliberal governance and attacks on organized labor. And with no real sense for just how long this window of opportunity will last, they say it's time to strike while the iron is hot. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
Six years have passed since Iran and several states, namely the US, China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, put their signatures to a deal under which Tehran agreed to limit some of its nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. But in 2018, the situation reached a deadlock when former U.S. President Donald Trump backed out of the deal. Not only that, but he also brought back the sanctions despite Iran's display of full compliance. Tehran waited for 1 year before finally cutting back on some of its commitments under the deal. Later on, with the administration of Joe Biden sweeping into power and the White House's declared willingness to return to the negotiating table, Tehran and the remaining signatories went back to the Austrian capital with an agenda to revive the landmark accord. Initially, some progress was made, but long-running issues remain unresolved to this day. In the meantime, the U.S. continues to keep the sanctions in place as a tool of pressure against Iran. Now, with the possibility of a renewed push for the revival of the deal, Tehran says it will not settle for anything less than results that would safeguard the rights of its people.
Iran is a country of dialogue and negotiation. But a negotiation that guarantees the rights of Iranian people and forces all parties to return to their commitments.
Iran has been sticking to one point, that Washington was the party to violate the deal and should therefore be the party to take the first step by returning to full compliance. Tehran says it will start resuming its commitment only after the complete removal of all U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner. Action and not words. That's what Iran is demanding. It also says the European partners likewise need to put aside their empty promises and get back to action.
It was the inaction of the European states that emboldened Trump to withdraw from all agreements and violate JCPOA and Resolution 2231. That happened because the European capitals all acted as only passive observers. We are expecting that all sides come to Vienna with the full understanding that there is no shying away from their commitments, which should be fully implemented under the accord.
Iran is seeking reassurances from the European signatories that such violations would never happen again. It says any renegotiation of the terms of the deal is out of question. The administration of President Ebrahim Raisi is reviewing the details of the previous six rounds of discussions held in Vienna. Now, with speculations on the possible resumption of talks in the coming days and Tehran's firm stance, one can only speculate about how the other parties will fare up.
Food experts in Britain have been advising shoppers to buy Christmas dinner months in advance or they might go without, leading to a surge in sales. Demand for turkey has gone up 400% in recent days, and even toy shops are warning their shelves might be empty soon.
With the pandemic easing, Brexit is back in the news, with shortages of food, fuel and labour taking their toll. And this is bad news for the Conservatives, who promised to get Brexit done. Under pressure, the government has now been forced to relax immigration rules and start issuing emergency six-month visas for thousands of butchers, poultry workers and HGV drivers to save Christmas and prevent 100,000 animals from being culled. Nonetheless, Prime Minister Boris Johnson insists there is no supply chain crisis, calling the current situation a symptom of an economy in revival.